It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and happy Monday to all of you. It feels like spring out there, a little bit of rain, and it feels really good. So happy Monday, ready to go after it again here. Steve, how are you doing this morning?
It's Monday, that's not my name.
I know it. So I'm going to jump right in here. We have so much to talk about. And when I have so much to talk about, I realize that I speed up my speech, and I'm going to try to keep it slowed down here so that you can get every point here. As we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom, whether with a weapon. But now what we see here in Colorado is with policy and unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't need force to implement it. And man, we're seeing socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, healthcare, all of the really important things to us, and things also that we might even not think about. I think we'll probably talk about it later this week, but I saw that there's some legislation going through the House now about chickens and exactly how many chickens can be in a cage, and it's actually going to increase the cost of eggs. So we're seeing the socialization of chickens too, Steve. Can you believe it?
I can't sigh. Loud enough, heavy enough. It's like, this is the role of state government.
Yeah. Yeah. When we have problems going on like we do. And anyway, I digress. Let's first of all say thank you. I so appreciate you, the team, Steve, Patty, Zach, Keith, and Charlie. And to each of you listeners, I appreciate you immensely as well. Today, go out and strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. I spent most of the weekend writing an op-ed on this Senate Bill 2163, which is the vaccination bill. And we're thinking that Facebook is starting to tap us down just a little bit. So go and take a look at that. Be sure and like it. Be sure and like my Facebook page as well. That's really important. So that is the Kim Munson Show. That's spelled MONSON.com. Our quote for today is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I read the book Bonhoeffer by Eric Metaxas, and I would highly, highly recommend it. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer was born in 1906, and he died in 1945. He was a German Lutheran theologian, important for his view on, secularization. Hold on. Something didn't print on my outline here, so I got to make sure I have all my words here. First view of Christianity's role in secular world. His involvement in a plot to overthrow Adolf Hitler led to his imprisonment and execution. His letters and papers from prison, published posthumously in 1951, is perhaps the most profound document of his convictions. Bonhoeffer was executed on April 9, 1945, 13 days before Hitler admitted his defeat in World War II. I'd recommend the book, Bonhoeffer, by Eric Metaxas. Hitler knew on April 9th that defeat was imminent. However, he searched for Bonhoeffer in the prison camps so that he could execute the 39-year-old pastor. And just remember, my friends, Nazi stands for the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And this is what Dietrich Bonhoeffer said. He said, "Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act." I think that's pretty profound, Steve.
I know. In life's journey, sometimes I see something happen and see somebody not act or not move in a certain direction. And I always dubbed it the no decision decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes not doing something speaks equally loudly.
Exactly. And this is a time certainly when we want to act with wisdom and discernment. But once again, not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. And on that somber note, let's run over and let's do something funny. How's this? Jason sent me this joke, and then I changed it a little bit, okay? So here we go. A young woman brought her fiancé home to meet her parents. After dinner, her mother told the girl's father to find out about the young man. The father invited the fiancé to his study for a talk. "So what are your plans?" the father asked the young man. "I am a biblical scholar," he replied. "A biblical scholar, the father said. "Admirable, but what will you do to provide a nice house for my daughter to live in?" "I will study," the young man replied, "and God will provide for us." "And how will you buy her a beautiful engagement ring such as she deserves?" asked the father. "I will concentrate on my studies," the young man replied. "God will provide for us." "And children?" asked the father. "How will you support children?" "Oh, don't worry, sir. God will provide," replied the fiancé. And the conversation proceeded like this, and each time the father questioned, the young idealist insisted that God would provide. Later, the mother asked, "How did your talk go, honey?" The father answered, "He's a Bernie Biden Democrat. He has no job, he has no plans, and he thinks I'm God."
Especially applicable to today's environment, yes.
That's for sure. One other thing, be sure and go to my website, kimmunson.com. You know, we had Helen Raleigh in on Friday morning, and then that evening I got a text from one of our listeners, Bob in Michigan. He said, "Mark Levin is talking about Helen Raleigh." So I texted her. I said, "You didn't tell me that you had talked to Mark Levin." She said, "I hadn't. He had read one of her pieces in Town Hall and was quoting it on his television show." So that is so darn cool. So you are going to have a great opportunity. I'm partnering up with Helen and Dr. Paul Prentice and for our first of our salon series. And it is at Water's Edge Winery on March 30th. And it is going to be the 3 punches to knock down democratic socialism. The cost is $20. There is a processing fee on top of that. And then you will be able to buy whatever you want to eat and drink. Chef D is going to have some great great things to choose from. And that is on March 30th. I would highly recommend that you go ahead and get your ticket. They are going fast. And you can go to my website and you can sign up right there. And again, that is the 3 punches to knock down democrat socialism. And as we're engaging with our kids, we need to be able, and our neighbors and our friends, we need to be able to talk about that. So before we get into everything else, Lauren Levy, who is one of my very valued sponsors with Polygon Financial, he is a mortgage specialist, and the markets are crazy. And when they're crazy and when you have a little knot in your stomach, there's typically a lot of opportunity. And Lauren Levy, there's a lot of opportunity right now regarding home financing, right?
That is correct, Kim.
So what's going
Maybe
on?
Maybe more opportunity today than even when we talked on Friday. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, the oil markets are going wild, aren't they?
And the treasury markets are equally as wild. And so the 10-year treasury broke under a half today for the first time ever after it broke under one just a couple days ago. So we're going to see, I'm assuming, mortgage rates even lower. It's hard for the banks to keep up and move at this pace and lower rates probably where they should be just because they don't know what's going on. But needless to say, they're low and they're going to stay low for the foreseeable future until this virus and now this oil war plays itself out.
You know, and I think that what happens to people, we talk with Jason McBride about the stock market, is people, they want to sell at the exact high and they want to buy at the exact low. And that's just not possible. And I think it's the same with interest rates. They're like, I want to get the very lowest rate. And, when you look at history, this today, it is a historical low rate. You might not get the exact bottom. But my gosh, many people may be able to refinance. Their homes have appreciated in value. So maybe some of these young folks that maybe had mortgage insurance, they might be able to work themselves out. I mean, I have a knot in my stomach. And every time I do, I know that that's a time of great opportunity. I just think that people should give you a call. Because the other thing you're doing is you're paying for the appraisal, right? If people call you?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I will help pay for people's appraisal if one is required on their refinance. And, Kim, you're right. people, I've talked to people who say, well, maybe I'll hold off and see if things continue to go lower. The problem is, at any point in time, just like we haven't seen this come down this fast, it could turn around and go back up.
Exactly.
And if you get stuck waiting, I tell people you could always refinance now, and 6 months later, if they're lower, we could always do it again, and I help pay the closing costs the second time around whenever possible. So if you can save money and get to a payment that makes you feel good, I would just do that and then worry about if you missed, you know, another eighth or a quarter of a point later, and you can maybe look at doing it again.
Okay. Now, does it cost people anything if they give you a call and you just take a look at things?
No, there's no cost at all. It's just a conversation about whether or not I think I can help them. And if we decide that there is an opportunity there, that still doesn't cost anything, really, if I'm paying for the appraisal. So there's really no cost until the very end.
And what would those costs be at the very end?
You know, just the standard closing costs on a loan. You know,
okay.
When you do a refinance, I'm not talking about any origination points or things like that. Closing costs without an appraisal on a refinance typically are about $2,000, but those aren't incurred until the decision is made to do the loan and the loan gets underwritten and you have title insurance and things like that that come into play. But until you get to that point, there are no costs incurred at all.
Well, it sure seems like people should give you a call. I have a feeling you're going to have a really busy day. What if,
yep.
So what's the best ways for people to reach you, Lauren? Because I know that you're going to be working nonstop all day.
Oh, yeah. So they can always go to the website, www.polyfigroup.com, or just call my cell, 303-880-8881. And I'm around. Believe me, I'm around all day.
This is a day, I think, to act. I just have a feeling that this is a very historical day. And I think that this is a day to act. And if you can make that happen, I mean, you can certainly save yourself thousands of dollars over the course of living in your home.
That's right. And sometimes much, much more than that. I mean, I just talked to a gentleman the other day who's going to save $81,000 over the life of his loan. That is a year or two or three to some people of not having to work at the end of their life.
Boy. Okay, so once again, how can people reach you, Lauren?
Best way is 303-880-8881.
Okay, 303-880-8881. Are you taking calls already this early?
Yeah, I'm walking into the gym with my phone right now. So
okay.
I'm available if anybody needs to talk.
Okay, fantastic. So highly would recommend and reach out to Lauren Levy. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't cost anything, and it may save you thousands and thousands of dollars. So, Lauren, thanks so much. How about let's talk on Wednesday again after we kind of see what's happening over these next couple of days. So let's talk again on Wednesday.
Okay, you got it. See you then.
Sounds great. Have a great day. Okay, and we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, the Avs are in second place in the Western Conference. The Nuggets have slipped to third place, and March Madness is right around the corner, and the place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesday is Dine and Wing Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99, and they've got these great new roasted wings. My favorite is the boneless wings. The girls are coming over on Wednesday night, and so I will have those. And if you don't want to cook, stop by and pick them up, or what I do is I just have one of the services deliver the Hooters wings right to my front door. More information, go to my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Sue Moore and her team with the Republican Liberty Caucus of Colorado is watching the legislation down at the State House. And it was there was some stuff that was introduced at the end of last week that is bad, 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 unfortunately. But you're going to want to hear about it, so we'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Oh, the good, the bad, the ugly. As Sue Moore, I have a feeling we're going to be talking about the bad and the ugly this morning. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kim. I'm happy to be here.
So what do our listeners need to know? What is going on down at the State House right now?
Yeah, well, that was the perfect intro to this segment, because there's really not a lot good going on, but there's a whole lot of bad and ugly. There was a whopper that was dropped last Thursday, the House Bill 1549, Colorado Affordable Health Care Option. This is probably going to be the biggest bill of the session. I'm guessing there may be the family leave bill may come back, but in terms of just impact to everyone, this is going to be the big one. Like I said, it was introduced last Thursday. There's a hearing this Wednesday in the House Health and Insurance Committee. That's likely to be a very packed meeting room, so you may want to get down there and see what's going on. But this is sponsored by three Democrats. Kerry Donovan, Dylan Roberts, and Chris Kennedy are behind this bill. Right now, there are no Republican sponsors signed on.
There better not be.
Well, you know, like I said, you never know. This is kind of a weird year. It'll be interesting to see what happens as this bill morphs through the system. But right now, no Republican sponsors. Again, this will have the greatest potential financial impact on the state economy, and the consequences will be felt by everyone, anyone who consumes health care, anyone who pays for health care. It's going to have a huge impact.
So what does it do exactly?
Well, here's what we know. The state would have to apply. First of all, the state will have to apply for a waiver of the the Affordable Care Act to implement this. They haven't done that yet. It has a provision in it that it does allow for innovative plans, but right now there's no guarantee. But we do suspect that won't be a problem for them. The plan will limit reimbursement to hospitals, basically. The pressure is going to be on the hospitals and the insurance providers. It'll limit the reimbursement to 155% to 218% of Medicare reimbursement. And you say, well, how bad can that be? Well, Medicare is really provided at under cost. So the only way hospitals stay in business is through private health care, because Medicare patients really don't pay. They don't pay enough to cover the costs. So this is only going to exacerbate that problem, because these rates probably still won't cover what the hospitals need to provide care to the total population. So, and it'll shift costs to the privately insured patients at even higher rates than they're provided now. So you say, well, it's going to go down. Well, it's going to go down for some people, but it's going to go way up for privately insured patients. That means companies have to pay more for health care for their employees. And, you know, in turn, they'll pass that cost on to their employees. So, you know, people are going to be paying more money is going to be taken out of their paycheck. So it's a trickle-down effect, and none of it's good. The insurance companies who provide private plans will be forced to offer the public plan, and they'll be forced to offer it in all Colorado counties. So, in essence, it could actually force some providers to leave the state entirely.
You think? You think?
Yeah.
And that's actually what they want to have happen. You know, I think ultimately that's what they want to have happen, is that your provider would leave your state.
Right. Yeah. So they're selling this as more competition, but government competition only forces the private suppliers out of the state. They just can't afford to compete with government. So they, you know, if you think you're going to get more choice, more competition, this is actually going to provide the opposite of that.
So, Sue, I want to walk through that just a little bit more so people understand this. We had Helen Raleigh on Friday, and she has a very important piece in The Federalist regarding the Bernie and Venezuela and what happened with Venezuela. And so Hugo Chavez said, oh, you know, we're going to basically nationalize health care. And what happened is that people can't get health care. They can't even get toilet paper down in Venezuela now. And so what you just said to me was that this would shift the cost over to your private insurers. And then the next thing you said is, and private insurers will leave the state. And if hospitals cannot actually make enough money to stay in business, do you honestly think that they're going to work for free? I mean, this is very, very bad, Sue Moore.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Kim. It's like I said, it's putting all the pressure on hospitals and the insurance companies. And, you know, believe it or not, insurance companies aren't in business to lose money. They go elsewhere. They go where the grass is greener. So that they'll pick up and leave if they have to provide this in all counties of Colorado, and they have to provide it in addition to their private plans. The dollars just aren't going to work out at some point. So, and that's what happens when you have price control. You get less of something. Mm-hmm. You don't get more of it. Mm-hmm. So, it's just not laying out very well for patients and taxpayers as well. And in addition to that, hospitals can't afford to work for less than cost. So, we think that possibly some rural hospitals are going to close over this. They just can't provide the care at the cost that the government is willing to pay them. Mm-hmm. So like I said, in place of, you're not going to get more care, you're not going to get more hospital provision, you're going to get less of it. Let's see. This plan also vests enormous power in the insurance commissioner. He's not an elected official. He can't be voted out of office. He's appointed by the governor, but he's in charge of implementing this plan in whatever way he sees fit, essentially. So we don't like that. It's just in terms of limited government and division of power and those kinds of things. And then one thing that came up in our conference call yesterday that no one's really talked about in the press is, you pay this hospital provider fee when you receive care, there's a little, mm-hmm. it may or may not even be on your bill. But
it's not on your bill. By law, they said it's not on your bill, if you can believe it. So go ahead.
Okay, right. So there's no transparency there. Well, that could be the safety valve in this whole thing. We don't know what's going to happen to that fee. They may have to blow that up just in order to cover all these costs that the hospitals are incurring. So, that could increase dramatically. And they call it a fee. It's not a tax. Essentially, it's a tax. Mm-hmm. But they pass that under the guise of, no, this is not a fee, this isn't a tax, therefore we don't need taxpayer a vote on this. So
disingenuous.
So it doesn't,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. So there are a lot of moving parts to this, and it's going to morph. It's the first meeting is this Wednesday, like I said. It's going to change. It'll be interesting to see how it changes. But you can't put lipstick on this pig, so we are opposing this. Just based on free market principles and limited government principles. But we are going to keep an eye on it and see how this works.
Okay. Yeah, keep us up to speed on that. And we've got, we've got about 3 minutes. I know we spent a lot of time on this, but this affects everybody, and we want people to understand that.
It does. Yeah. So there are a couple gun bills that came down. We've kind of been waiting for something to show up on the gun side. House Bill 1355, the Secure Storage of Firearms. It's sponsored by Jeff Bridges, Monica Duran, Chris Hansen, and Kyle Mulica, another group of Democrats. And in quotes, it's concerning measures to secure firearms to prevent use by persons not lawfully permitted to possess firearms. So basically, it requires anyone who owns a gun and knows or should know that a juvenile or another resident of the premises or premises that are under your control, that's loosely defined, you don't know what that means. Anyway, anyone who is ineligible to own a gun, if you know that someone might have access to that gun, you have to keep it securely locked up by a variety of methods, one of which is a trigger guard, which is, that's fairly benign, but it'll require you to have that, and it'll also require you to keep it in some kind of safe firearm storage container, some kind of a safe. Basically, it's just creating more regulations for lawful gun owners to
telling you what you can and cannot do in your own home. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. Well, that and that a criminal isn't gonna comply with these laws. You're just putting more regulations on people who are responsible gun owners. It's not going to do what it's intended to do. There's a sister bill to that also, 1356, that's called Lost or Stolen Firearms. And it requires a gun owner to report the loss or theft of a gun to law enforcement within 48 hours of discovering that it is lost or stolen. So, I don't know how they determine what you know and when you know it, but first offense is just a $25 fine. The second is a Class 3 misdemeanor. But again, law enforcement has to, and then once you've disclosed this, law enforcement will enter that information about the firearm into a national crime information database. So the same arguments apply here. Responsible gun owners keep track of their firearms, mm-hmm. and they store them safely. They keep them out of the hands of children. Criminals don't care, and they're not going to comply with this law. So again, you're punishing the wrong person. You're punishing the person who is actually the responsible gun owner here. So these are basically feel good, do nothing bills, but it makes for good media, and it's a good tagline on a mailer when you're running for re-election.
Wow. But,
And just think about this, my friends. They're putting in place a law that tells you what you can and cannot do in your own home. You may think that's okay with guns, but wait till it's something that you care about. And this is very, very dangerous. So, oh my gosh. Sue Moore, I know you're starting to do scorecards. How can people get all this information?
Exactly. Yeah, we've started publishing our scorecard. It basically gives a grade to each legislator based on how they voted versus what our positions were on bills. It's called the Liberty Scorecard. Everything of it can be found at our website. It's rlcco.org. And the bills are all there, the bills that we just reviewed for this week, as well as the Liberty Scorecard. There's a link there. You can look up and see how your legislator is doing. The scores are not beautiful yet. Some are coming up. I feel like we're having some impact. They're starting to pay attention because a lot of legislators use these scores for when they're running for re-election just to demonstrate whether or not they're liberty-minded, I suppose. The ones who care about that thing use it to their advantage. So it's all there. It's all in black and white. It's objective. It's simple. Check it out when you get a chance.
And again, that website is what?
It's rlcco.org.
Okay, rlcco.org. Sue Moore, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next Monday morning.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, we're going to jump over here. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Did you hear I used your joke this morning? I changed it a little bit, but I used the joke that you sent me.
Well, did Steve like it? That's a big question.
Oh, he said yes, he did. Okay.
Oh, well, see, you know, that's how you get him to giggle. Just use someone else's jokes.
Okay, Jason McBride, the markets are wild. And I was talking to Lauren Levy earlier with Polygon Financial about mortgage rates. I have kind of a knot in my stomach with all that's going on with interest rates and with the market and with oil. And typically when things are like this, there's tremendous opportunity. What do you think?
Well, there certainly can be, and I know you talked to Lauren, and this isn't my area that I work with, but my goodness, with more interest rates coming down, mortgage rates don't always follow exactly, but recently I know rates on mortgages have come down. And you know, Kim, if you're getting close to retirement and you're going to head into retirement and there's no way you can get your mortgage paid off first and you have a pretty good size balance on it, you know, this could be a golden opportunity to refi. And again, I'm more of a debt-free kind of guy, but if you're going to have payments going into retirement, one of the best things you can do is get your monthly nut as low as possible. I've seen people that just refied less than a year ago or even 6 months ago that have the opportunity to get their interest rate a point or more lower, and that's a big difference if you have to have a monthly payment.
Well, and if people sat down with you and did a discovery session, you'll talk about all those things as you try to figure out, you know, what to do as they move into retirement. And I would just highly recommend at this point in time for people to sit down with you and just take a look at these things, because I know we all kind of have a knot in our stomach, but this is a time I think there's great opportunity if you sit down and really plan appropriately.
Well, yeah, there's things you could do. I mean, obviously the markets are crazy. You think maybe we're getting close to the end, and then all this stuff breaks out with oil over the weekend. I mean, this morning's going to be very, very ugly, at least at the start. But You know, it's all lies until the last 20 minutes, so we'll see how we close.
Okay. Well, we will talk to you tomorrow, Jason McBride. It's Fasten Your Seatbelt, and we'll see what happens, what will happen today. If people want to reach out to you to set up a discovery session, give Natalie a call at 7:30. She'll be at the switchboard. The number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or you can check out our website, our landing page together, and that's airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. And we'll talk to you tomorrow morning, Jason, see what happens.
All right, Kim, have a good show.
Thanks so much. And we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Heather Lodenpera is on the line. And we'll talk about this Senate Bill 163, which is, quote-unquote, the vaccination bill. Before we do that, though, I want to make sure I forgot to talk about our bill of the day, and that is House Bill 2010-65. It is the Harm Reduction Substance Use Disorders, and it is a bill that's requiring health insurers to reimburse hospitals for prescribing opiate antagonists to covered individuals. It creates immunity for individuals who administer an expired antagonist. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Well, I went in, that caught my attention
okay. Real
quick and said, in the pharmacology world, it's one drug that counteracts another is called an antagonist.
Okay. So, and it allows pharmacists to sell non-prescribed clean syringes or needles to individuals without a prescription. It allows local public health agencies to operate clean syringe programs without county approval. And it allows hospitals to operate a clean syringe program, increases appropriations, more money, to the Harm Reduction Grant Program Cash Fund. And this bill actually increases state and local expenditures. While minimally decreasing state revenue, it says, on an ongoing basis. Then just the Gazette had a headline. They said the El Paso Health Board opposes the state measure because they think that they should have control over that instead of what the state has to say. So, again, that is House Bill 2010-65. And Patty thought, you know, this is very relevant regarding our subject matter of today when we talked to Heather, and that is regarding vaccinations because they both use needles. And we'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and on the line with me is Heather Lodenpera. She is a woman who is very concerned about our children, and there is a bill. It's Senate Bill 2163. I wrote an op-ed on it. You can find it at my website. I titled it, I Am Not an Anti-Vaxxer. What we have seen in the discussion on vaccinations is that there's been labels that have been put on people that if you even ask a question about a vaccination, you're labeled as an anti-vaxxer. And then, I don't like the way the conversation has gone on this. Heather Lodenpera, you haven't liked the way that conversation has gone on that either, have you?
Good morning, Kim. No, I haven't. I haven't liked it at all.
And why are you concerned about this Senate Bill 163?
Well, Senate Bill 163, it is a follow-up bill to the bill that died last year, which was House Bill 1312. It's being called a modernization bill of the school entry immunization process. But what it really is it's a bill that's disguised to eventually get rid of all options for opting out of vaccines. Right now, we have exemptions in Colorado. We have three. We have a personal belief exemption, a religious belief exemption, and a medical exemption. And what this bill does is several things, but one of the very troubling parts of this bill is that it seeks to get rid of the medical exemption and get rid of the personal belief exemption and to meld them into one exemption called a non-medical exemption. So what this does is it effectively gets rid of a protected class of people, the religious people, and people with a very strong personal belief. And it makes it into this sort of non-meaningful, non-medical exemption. And that is a really troubling part of this bill. Then the other part is that then this bill wants to have people who want to take a non-medical exemption. Now, this could be for one of the vaccines on the schedule. And as we've talked about before, we know that in our current schedule of the recommended CDC schedule, there are 54 shots by the time a child is 18 years old, and there's 72 doses of diseases in those shots. So it's not the same schedule that we're talking about when you were a kid or when your kids were kids. This is extremely an expanded schedule.
And on that note, Heather, I think people need to realize that then there's going to be unelected bureaucrats in the future that could put more require more vaccines on that schedule. And you may have, you know, like the HPV vaccine right now, there's some people that really don't think that should necessarily be on the recommended list. But if it is, then it would be forced. You'd be forced to take it. So there could be something in the future, and you may be diametrically opposed to it. And this bureaucrat puts it on that list, and you would have to put it into your body, from what I can see. I mean, am I off the rails on that or not?
No, you're not off the rails. So Section 5 of this bill gives the entire process of adopting immunizations into the schedule, deciding exemption policy, everything around vaccinations would be given by this bill to the Colorado CDPHE, the Board of Health, the Colorado Department of Health and Environment. They would be in charge. They're unelected, as you said. They would be in charge of doing anything they wanted with this vaccination business, which means that after this bill passes, the board, they could meet and say, you know what, we don't want this non-medical exemption anymore. Boom, no more non-medical exemptions. You know what, we're going to harmonize the Colorado vaccination schedule, which is the required schedule for school entry, into the ACIP, American Academy of, it's ACIP is the body, the federal body that decides the vaccinations. They could say, we're going to harmonize right to the ACIP schedule, which would add four vaccines to our schedule, annual flu, HPV, meningitis, and Hep B. In one fell swoop, that would happen. So, yes, this is alarming. And all of those vaccinations then could be immediately required for school entry. Now, this bill and exemptions could be taken away. But let's say exemptions aren't taken away right away. What this bill does right now is that if you're exempting from any vaccination, let's say you didn't have your child vaccinated on the day of birth with hepatitis B because you decided that your child wasn't going to be at risk for a sexually transmitted disease or a disease that is passed through needle sharing, and because you as a mother did not have hepatitis B. So there's a lot of people out there without the Hep B shot because of those reasons. You would have to, in order to enroll your child in school, submit personally identifying information of your child and you into a state database in order to claim that exemption. And then the state would allow your child to attend school, but only after you either filled out their form and submitted this information to the department with a doctor's signature. So you'd have to go into a vaccine provider and argue, about your religious or personal beliefs around this vaccination.
You mean you couldn't just sign it yourself?
You can't just sign it yourself. You have two options. You can sign it, and then you go to a vaccine provider, and you get to spend your money at a doctor's office arguing about your personal and religious beliefs. Do you think doctors will sign that? I don't. Or your second option is that you would have to do a re-education module.
What?
A re-education module made by the CDPHE. Now, they already have a module online, and it's one-sided. There's no risks of vaccination risks on that module. This is supposedly an interactive module that hasn't been made yet. So you have to understand that our legislators voted on something that they don't even know what it's going to look like. And then once you complete this re-education module, you will get a certificate of completion. All your data will be entered into this state database, and then you take that certificate to your school.
Wow, it's really, it's troubling. And let's talk about this data thing, and then Heather Lauden-Pera. We know that the Chinese hacked Equifax, and they got information on 135 million people here in America, and we're pretty concerned about that.
Yep.
What about a data breach on this whole, what do they call it, the tracking system on that? I mean, it very possibly our children's data could be at risk.
Absolutely. So our children's data is at risk not only for hacking, which parents are very concerned about, and in fact in the Senate testimony, the overwhelming testimony talked about parents worried about data breach because of bullying of their children if this information gets out. It sets up this whole second class of people who are exercising their right to say no to a medical procedure. But if as you know, Kim, this environment right now is very hostile. Parents are very concerned about a data breach, and there are data breaches all the time. You can find the data breaches that occur in our government databases, and it's not a small number. So it's not as though this is a rock-solid database. And yes, parents are very, very concerned about a data breach. The other problem with this is that this CIS, Colorado CIIS, is the tracking system. It is accessible by 6,500 individuals in the state, nurses, doctors, people in clinics, people in schools, the nurse, health nurses. But it's also then shared across other agencies, and that is not very transparent to the average person. So we have no idea where this data is going to go. But the thought alone of just 6,500 individuals in the state
is not secure.
One person, right? One person with a vendetta could blast out all the children on that exempted list.
Wow! Oh my gosh! There's a lot of danger in this particular bill, Senate Bill 163, and I am not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm really concerned about government and what they're doing on this. Let's go to break. When we come back, I'm trying to find something that I found in researching for my op-ed, which is at kimmunson.com, regarding something that was in the bill. And so let's go to break. I have Heather Lauden-Pera on the line. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. And be sure and like us on Facebook as well. I think Facebook's trying to tap us down a little bit because we're having such honest conversations about these really important things that are happening down here in Colorado. On the line with me is Heather Lauden-Pera. She's a concerned citizen, concerned mom about, we're talking about the Senate Bill 2163. And Heather, you and I both read this legislation. I used to think it was above my pay grade. It's not. People should read it instead of engaging in kind of bombastic language. Make sure you read it. You know what you're talking about. But they do kind of these different where they're declarations. And so I was going through and thinking, okay, they make these declarations. It's like, who said this? where did you source this? And so as I was working on my piece that is at KimMunson.com, on our Declaration E, it says, during the Spanish-American War, more American soldiers died from yellow fever, malaria, and other diseases than from combat. The U.S. Army created the Yellow Fever Commission, which was led by Major Walter Reed, a surgeon. The commission's work eventually helped contribute to the development of the 17D vaccine against yellow fever, a vaccine that is still used today. But, okay, so I found the piece. This is from armyhistory.org. And you're going to find this really interesting. It says, as a result of the Reed Commission's findings, the military governor of Cuba, Major General Leonard Wood, authorized the Army's chief sanitation officer, Major William C. Gorgas, to implement an experimental program of inoculations. However, many of the volunteers died, prompting Gorgas to cancel the experiment. The only other solution was to eradicate the mosquitoes in Havana, and that's what they started to do. But they quote this particular piece, but they leave that part out. And I tell you what, when you have politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties not telling you the truth and kind of using smoke and mirrors, then we need to stand up and say, this is not a good bill, and we need to work to defeat it. Heather, your comment.
Well, that's very interesting, Kim, and I wish that I knew a little bit more about that. I was speaking to someone about a similar topic on this bill yesterday, and yes, I don't know what to call them, half-truths in that declaration. It's unclear. They talk about vaccines, you know, being this thing that has improved the lifespan more than anything else. We all have to agree that sanitation and clean water have done more for human health than probably anything else. But we continue to push this vaccination story as if it's the one and only thing that will save us. And I think that that's a big problem.
It is a big problem. So, Heather, we've got a little bit of time. I think that you've had a chance to take a look at the op-ed that I did. And there's more information I could have put in there. But, you know, at some point in time, you don't want listeners or readers to quit reading, but there were seven things that I saw that were a big problem in that. And you kind of mentioned one of those, and that is this bullying of parents and students. And I have actually heard people say, I hate anti-vaxxers. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, because then it puts everybody in a box. And if you say, wait a minute, I'm concerned about this whole list of things that I might be forced to put into my body or my child's body, how about let's have a conversation about the benefits and the effects so that we can make a decision on that instead of using government force to make that happen? And then, as you mentioned, there could be this registry that there's 6,500 people that have their fingers on it that, oops, that registry just got released. And you could see people start to bully, talk down, and ridicule parents and students, and that is actually the actual words that Representative Stephen Woodrow, Democrat, said in his closing remarks regarding House Bill 2012-39, which was the Vaccine Consumer Protection Act. All the Dems voted yes, the Republicans voted no, but he said he realized that there is bullying and talking down and ridiculing of parents and students. I thought that was pretty interesting, Heather Laudenpera.
That's right, and I'm sorry to correct you, but on the Vaccine Consumer Protection Bill, the Republicans actually voted yes to have around vaccines, and the Democrats voted no. But that's okay. I mean,
thank you for correcting me. I had that correct in the piece.
Clear.
That's good.
So yeah, so there's a couple things that come to mind listening to you, Kim. One, really briefly, I want to say about the bill is another thing it has the bill would require schools to do. Is to every year, hand out a paper with the number of children exempted from every vaccine in that school to the parents, the students, everyone in that school. So can you imagine if they said, you know, we also are going to hand out a paper that says all the active chlamydia, gonorrhea, mono, shigella, whatever else, cytomegalovirus, actual diseases that kids are carrying, and handing those out. How would that feel to the kid with one of those? who do you think doesn't have that vaccine? Is it Bobby? Who do you think has chlamydia? Is it Sally? Right? I mean, does that foster a good,
yeah,
safe environment? It's very disturbing to me. And then,
yeah,
the second thing that comes to mind after you talking about that is that there is this made-up thing called an anti-vaxxer. And I have to tell you, Kim, that the most troubling part for parents who are concerned about this is that most parents have experienced a vaccine reaction. They've watched it with their own eyes, in their own children, or in a loved one. My brother was brain damaged after the DPT shot in 1970. He never walked. He never talked. So there's people very concerned because they've watched actual injury in their children, and no one will listen. Everyone says that's a coincidence. And I don't know how bureaucrats and the CDC and people involved in this issue can continually ignore parents and continue the rhetoric of safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective, when people are saying, no, this is what we are seeing. And so now these parents who have experienced this are now, not only do they have to deal with children who have been injured, but now they have to deal with people saying, I hate anti-vaxxers, and this whole rhetoric out there. And it's a false narrative that is so prevalent in our society. The media has done an amazing job of spreading this
narrative. Yeah, this narrative.
This hateful narrative.
Now, let's just talk about this, though, because, safe, effective vaccines, man, that sounds really good to me. But the way you get to safer and more effective vaccines is not by government forcing that people have to take a product. If a product has to compete to become better and better and compete in the battle of ideas with, people sitting down and looking at this vaccine for their child, and they're looking at all the benefits and what the effects are, and they say, I think this is a really good idea because it's going to protect my child, blah, blah, you know. Or, right, no, I'm not going to. And then that would require the manufacturers to go back and create a better and better product. But when you have government that says, hey, you have to have this, and and you don't have a choice on that, then, and then there's been a couple of very interesting things. There was some legislation, I quoted it in here, regarding legislation that protects manufacturers from people being able to bring a suit against them. And then there was also a Supreme Court case. And so instead of manufacturers having to compete, they're protected by government.
That's right. That's a really important point, Kim. In 1986, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act was signed into law by Ronald Reagan because so many parents had been suing vaccine manufacturers for vaccinations that were harming their children, like that DPT shot. And so what happened was the vaccine manufacturers said they would stop making vaccines unless they were given indemnity. So they are no longer, you cannot sue a vaccine company, a manufacturer, for injury from a vaccine. So they have no liability. And without liability, then there's also no incentive to make a better product. It would be like, what if cars could just do, you could do whatever they wanted, and if the brakes didn't work very well, you know what? You can't sue the manufacturer. It would give them no incentive to make safer and safer vehicles. So this is what we're dealing with these vaccines, which the schedule is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's no liability. And so if government starts creating these mandates and these tracking systems,
with that narrative out there of anti-vaxxers, it's a dangerous place to be in America.
It really is. And people need to really look at this and understand that they have been duped. I'm not saying people shouldn't get vaccines. I vaccinated my kids.
I just got the shingles vaccine. So.
But people need to understand that they've been duped, that vaccines are all bad, but that they've been duped with this narrative, this anti-vax narrative that if you have any questions about this, how could you not have a question about it if you really looked into it? How could you not have a question that manufacturers have no liability? How could you not have a question that when you were a kid, you probably got maybe 8 shots, and now kids are expected to get 54? How can there not be questions about, how can you not have a question about no true placebo trials, which is a big deal?
Those are such great points, Heather, because questioning and engaging in a battle of ideas on these things is what makes it better and better. We've got just about a minute, Heather Lautenpera. What is the thing that you want our listeners to really, really know?
I want our listeners to know that the time is now to speak up. This bill has passed through the Senate. It will be heard in a House committee soon. We don't know when. It could be tomorrow. It could be Wednesday. It could be the following week. We don't know. But every person who has any concern about ever wanting to say no to a vaccine without being tracked or without being coerced into it, or even with making the choice, period, needs to speak out to the governor to tell him to veto this bill, veto Senate Bill 163 should it come across his desk. And before that, get a hold of your representative and let them know that you are concerned about this. We cannot let this bill move forward.
Okay, and to that point, I would actually recommend to contact every House representative. Send them an email, reach out to them, and then go to my website and take a look at the op-ed that I did. I am not an anti-vaxxer, and like it. I greatly appreciate that because I think that Facebook is tapping us down on some of these things because we're speaking such truth to that. So Heather Lautenpera, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kim. I appreciate it.
And our quote for today is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He says, the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. To this great unknown.